Hey everybody, what's going on? It's Rob Marchand. I'm Hunting Out Loud, and today we're going to be talking to a taxidermist, Brandon Hitchcock. And what's going on, Brandon?
Not a whole lot.
Not a whole lot.
12-hour shift, and now I'm here.
I appreciate you coming over. We're about a month from season here in Kentucky, from deer season here in Kentucky, and when it's so warm early in September, stuff like that, getting your deer from the field to you, I mean, what's some important things that people should know just in that hot weather? I mean, what kind of advice would you have for people?
Well, most hunters know ahead of time. You know, they're pre-scouting and everything, their areas. They know the deer that are going after them, and they got to prepare for the hunt. You know, it's just like anything, getting your arrows right, get your bow right. But a big part of that, if you get that trophy, what are you going to do?
Right.
You know, so you got to think ahead. Okay, if I kill this animal, how am I going to keep it nice and cold, you know, before I get it to the processor? You got to have a plan of action. You can't say, well, I start work at noon, I'm going to go deer hunt, I'm going to let it hang in the garage in 90 degree heat, and I'll take care of it this evening. It ain't going to work, especially in Kentucky season coming in with the velvet racks. And, you know, that's a whole other monster you got to deal with. But, you know, you plan ahead. You have your cooler. If you're pretty confident, you know, some of us are, but then we'll go all season not hit anything. But, you know,
right, be ready.
Bag of ice don't cost much.
Yeah.
You know, so when you gut your deer, you're going to shove bags of ice up in the body cavity after you gut him. And once you get him moved, if you're planning on having a shoulder mount done, you want to get bags of ice on that cape. If it's hot, you want to get it somewhere fast. You can't be going around showing your buddies and say, hey, look what I got. And the whole time, bacteria is just eating at that thing.
Yeah.
So from a taxidermist point of view, you know, I look at something, I have no idea what's happened to it before it come to me.
Mm-hmm.
And then it goes through our tanning process or whatever, and then the hair starts falling out of it. It's easy to say, look what you did to my cape. Well, there's a lot of things happen before it gets to me, and you know, those things need to be taken in consideration.
And as you know, the summertime coat on these deer, I mean, it's a totally different thing than killing one in November when they have their winter coat. I mean, you know, them things are tough and thick in the winter,
right?
But that summertime coat, I mean, that thing's thin. I know,
shoot, you can look at it and the hair jump off.
Yeah. I think the one I brought you last year, I drug it. I didn't drag that thing very far, but yeah, I left a mark in that thing.
Yeah,
and of course, something you had talked to me about doing was maybe getting a tarp or a sled or something.
Yeah, just simple that sled, deer drag. It's a roll of plastic that you can roll up, put in your pack.
Light.
Don't take up much room, you know, and just strap it down and pull it over stuff. Because, you know, how it's taken care of in the field is going to show, you know, in the mount. I mean, there's only so much taxidermists can do, you know, to fix things.
Well, another thing, that piece of plastic that you're talking about, or a sled or something, I know you talked to us about Kyle Gross. He killed his first velvet buck about grabbing him velvet antlers and dragging them. So that's another thing you guys need to pay attention to, are you women out there hunting. I mean, you spend all this time and all this money to take your big monster buck, get him to the taxidermist. I mean, you don't want to just flop it over there and be something he can't deal with. I mean, that's something you're going to look at for the rest of your lives. And it could be your dream buck this year. So, you know, maybe that sled. I mean, I'm going to get that piece of plastic because I'm the world's worst. And you have all them emotions when you kill that deer, you kill that monster. Like you said, Brandon, it's good to already have a plan in action ready.
Right.
Because, you know, first thing you want to do is get on your phone and tell everybody, and it might be 90 degrees, and so just try to take care of that deer. And,
I mean, your time and effort you put into something, the money you spend on tags and license,
taxidermist,
your bow, just everything preparing for that moment.
Yeah.
And then you're not prepared when you kill the thing what to do with it. And then, you know, your trophy could be ruined.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's part of the whole planning process going on the hunt to begin with.
Let's just hypothetical, I guess. Say it's one of those 85, 90 degree days, which is pretty common early season here in Kentucky.
Right.
How long we have to get that deer taken care of to you, to a taxidermist?
To the taxidermist or to a processor, or skinning yourself if you're comfortable with that, you've got about an hour to 2 hour window.
That's not
to be 100% okay, I'm good. And if you put ice on it, you're good for a few more hours.
Yeah.
But beyond that, then you start taking chances because a lot of the moist tissue, like around the eyes, inside the ears, the mouth, the nostrils, that's where bacteria grows. And that's, you know, if it's wet, if it's got blood in it, it's got a high possibility of slipping in those spots.
It's in trouble. And then on top of that, if you're wanting to get velvet rack done, if it's in velvet, I mean, so there's just a lot to early season.
Oh, be prepared. With the velvet, I mean, when you shoot one, you don't know if it's hard velvet, soft velvet. If the tips are soft and they've got a lot of soft tissue inside of it, you can rip them plumb off when you grab them.
Yeah.
And most times, within probably the first week of the Kentucky season, they'll start, you know, shedding all that. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know that. It's pictures of one day, full velvet, next day it's stripped.
Yeah.
sorry.
Oh, it's all right.
But, you know, you got to be tender with it when you do kill the animal. He's going to fall. He's going to crash in the woods. All that, you know, that stuff's going to happen. But if you want to take a picture with him or whatever, you know, kind of grab him by his chin and his neck. Don't mm-hmm. grab the rack.
Don't grab the velvet.
Yeah, it could peel right off your hands.
So just, you're going to be excited just trying to harness that. And I mean, so you can get your deer to the taxidermist and he can do a good job with it. Another thing I was wanting to, well, you know, you're saying an hour, 2 hours. We're talking about 85, 90 degree day, which is common, right? Early season Kentucky. So you all need to be shooting because you sure don't want to make a bad shot on one. You make a bad shot, gut shot or something like that, where you have to let that thing lay overnight, it's over. You forget that.
Usually the coyotes would be on it.
Yeah, the coyotes anyways on it. So, you know, keep shooting your bow. I mean, that's, there's a lot to it. And so, hey, you know, Brandon, when I come in your shop, I mean, it seems like there's a lot of taxidermists. I mean, all over the place.
Oh, there's
but
tons.
There's just a few quality taxidermists. And that's my opinion. That's my eyes. I mean, I know we've got a lot here.
Right.
And you being a taxidermist.
Yeah. I'm afraid for something to fall off the wall here.
Some of them might bother you a little bit. But, you know, when you're looking for a taxidermist, you know, our listeners, when they're looking for a taxidermist, what's some of the things that they want to look for? I know when I come in your shop and I looked around at your stuff, one, I seen quality work.
Yeah.
And then two, I seen someone, I mean, really, that had a passion for what they was doing. You wasn't in there just trying to hurry up, get this deer or turkey or whatever out of the shop and get your money, your pay. I could tell you really had a love for it and had a passion for it. And that's why I like taking my stuff to you. I mean, what are some of the things you'd recommend them looking for?
Well, you want to do your homework first. You just don't show up at somebody's shop and say, hey, out this for me. You want to look at the quality of the work on the wall. And you got to know what you're looking at. Some people, I mean, shoot, you could put a rack on a 5-gallon bucket and they'll say, oh, look at that mount. It's awesome.
Yeah.
But you got to educate yourself on what a deer looks like. Now, it's the relationship between the taxidermist and the hunter. How much does he want to spend? And there is a relative figure there on, you know, however much money you want to spend is the quality of the work.
Yeah, you get what you pay for.
Right. And I think I'm fair in what I offer. I mean, you know, I could do a deer head for $800.
Yeah.
And everybody around here is like, oh my God, I could have four done for that price.
Yeah.
But we're talking about a show quality, competition grade mount. Well, not everybody can afford that. You know, I understand that. Plus, deer season's coming right before Christmas. People have got family and kids, and I enjoy doing the work. So, you know, you try to get a mid range where I feel comfortable, you know, making what I need to make for my time. Because, you know, I work a full time job, this is extra. And, you know, if I'm going to spend time away from my family, I won't be paid for it.
Oh, absolutely. I
mean, and, you know, you spend 26 years learning the art of this, you know, wildlife art. And people in this area in the tri-state, it's kind of everybody's looking for a deal.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But for some reason in people's minds, they think, well, it's a better deal for somebody does $250-$300. They think they're getting a great deal, but it doesn't work that way.
You're probably not going to get the quality for sure.
Right. And the guys that are $250-$300, they're happy with what they do. Their customers are happy. And that's fine. Yeah. I just don't do that.
Well, you're a seasoned taxidermist.
Right.
And, you're going to get what you pay for. And that's another thing we was just talking about. Early season, these velvet bucks, you may have just an hour or 2 hours to get them to the taxidermist. Right now is the time you should be, checking these things out. If you don't have a taxidermist you trust or something, maybe you should be studying up on that and going to some taxidermists around your area and checking them out before season comes in so you know who you're going to take it to and talk to them and see what they have to say about bringing your trophy in. And that way you have a plan right there also. Because early season, if you're hunting early season in Kentucky, if you're ready and you're set, you have a good opportunity to kill a big buck, in my opinion.
Right.
I love it. So just checking your taxidermist out right now would be a good thing to do. We're just 30-something days away, I think. I don't know the exact number, but we're getting close. I know I'm excited. And you was talking about doing taxidermy shows and stuff. I'd like to go to one of them, just watch. Have you competed in any competition, taxidermy competition?
Yeah, I go to the state shows. I've been to Kentucky shows, Ohio, West Virginia. Where else? Oh, I've been to the World Championships. I competed there. I compete in professional division because, that's what I do. I'm commercial taxidermist and do professional work. There's also a different class. It's called, my brain ain't working right now. Sorry.
I do it all the time when I'm
on this microphone.
Well, I do it all the time. I'm worse on the phone. I'm like, huh? What?
Well, there's amateur, commercial, professional, and masters.
Okay.
Professional division is basically you are being judged by an opinion from somebody that's a world champion, state, national champions, and these guys know their stuff.
Yeah.
90% of the time they do. And by competing, you're judged against the score sheet. How accurate is your eye? How accurate is your nose, your ears, your earbuds? Is the symmetry right? There's so many little things they check you on. And what I'm taking to these shows is my customers' mounts. They're not showpieces.
Yeah.
I might have 18 hours in a mount by the time it's skinned, tanned, mounted, detailed. And I'm going to competing with that.
Yeah.
The customer's piece. Well, then the guy I'm competing in the same category, he might have 4 months in that mount,
Mm-hmm.
But I'm scoring 89, 90 with a customer mount that, it's just repetition, years of experience, and improving upon those skills. And being able to interpret the reference of a live animal and how to reproduce that.
Bring it back to life.
Right.
Yeah.
Because you'll look at some and it's like,
oh yeah,
what happened there?
You can look at some in here and ask that question. Now, when you walk
I go to Texas Roadhouse and my wife gets aggravated because I'm sitting there
you're
picking
gonna critique
apart
it.
The mouth. Oh yeah,
that's what I was. I knew when you come in here, you knew exactly which two was yours in here, and it's been a couple, 2 or 3 years since you done them.
Right.
And then of course a few of them are Bruce Mercer's, and no doubt you had been able to pick those out.
Yeah,
that's quality work.
After a while, you notice people's work.
Yeah,
you got a. I mean, like I said, 26 years of doing this, you kind of see people's quality and that how they mount something, how they set an eye.
Yeah.
I can pick them out. I got an uncle. He's got a whole room full of Bruce Mercer stuff. Now my stuff's going in there.
Yeah.
You can walk in and just pick it out.
Yeah. Well, you and Bruce, in my opinion, are the best in this area that I've seen. I know we have a lot of taxidermists. I'm not knocking on anybody, but, from what I've seen, you guys do the best work. Now, there's somebody I follow on Facebook. I think you mentioned you might know him, and he cracks me up. Rick Steele, you know that guy?
Oh, yeah.
From competition?
Yeah. Well, mainly from Facebook.
Just Facebook, man.
I mean,
he's crackerjack, ain't he?
Well, the old school idea of these taxiderms having closed doors and not letting other taxidermists in.
Yeah.
I run into a lot when I first started.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, back then, Bruce Mercer was the man.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay. And I told myself, nothing towards Bruce, but I was like, one day there's not going to be a Bruce.
Yeah.
So I was like, I just love the art of it, so I want to be like Bruce one
day. Well, that's how you get better.
Right, right. You know, you make goals and you
set goals. Yeah, absolutely.
You set steps to achieve those goals. And sometimes they cost money.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I probably spent as much money in 26 years going to seminars and learning from the best. You know, that I probably could have went to school and been a doctor.
Well, and that's why your work's quality. Now, you know, when you go to these competitions, is there a certain animal you have to take? I mean, do you have to have a deer, or can you take whatever bird or anything that you want?
Yeah, you can take anything.
Okay, so
there's different categories. You know, there's waterfowl, there's upland game birds, there's life size, there's game heads, there's whitetail.
So that's what I was wondering.
Yeah,
I didn't know if you had a, like your crow going up against a whitetail or something like that.
No, it's not like that. You're in a category with,
okay,
you know,
the same.
Right. In 2015, well, for example, 2015, I entered 5 categories.
Okay.
And I took a game head, which was I did not take a deer head. I took a Spanish goat that I killed.
Oh, yeah.
Great big monster. So I mounted that thing up and I just stuck it on the wall. Never thought about it.
Well, daggone it. You didn't know that I forgot to turn my phone down.
Oh, really?
Yeah. All that stuff I was doing to get prepared here. See, be prepared, people. Be ready. No.
But then I had a life-size piebald deer laying down.
Yeah.
I did a turkey. And I done a rattlesnake. So I entered reptile, life-size, game head, turkey. What else was there? There was something else. I'm trying to remember. I think it was a duck.
Yeah.
And I won best all-around taxidermy state of Ohio 2015.
That's pretty daggone good.
For me, it was just like, you know, that's the pinnacle.
Mm-hmm.
I could go further with it, you know, and try to really push myself. But for me, that was it. Because,
oh, absolutely.
You know, there's guys, that's all they do is deer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I do everything.
Oh, yeah.
So by being able to put all these pieces in and compete in all these categories.
Yeah, it's quite an accomplishment.
It was for me.
No doubt.
I was proud of that.
Or for anyone. My goodness. Well, you was talking just a minute ago about when you was, I guess, first getting up and coming, and you was looking at Bruce, and Bruce was the man at the time. And that's where you set your goal to be as good as Bruce, or not better. And so I'm putting you on the spot. How about the young taxidermist coming up now that might be looking at Brandon Hitchcock?
Hey, I got an open door. I don't work like those other guys did 30 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, I've had many guys come in my shop, spend a day with me. I'll teach them little things free. They don't pay me nothing. They just come in and spend a day with me.
Well, it's your love for taxidermy.
It is.
Taxidermy, your passion. You want to pass it on just like as I do, you know,
well,
teaching
someone
deer.
Well, my thought is, why, you know, if somebody's seeking knowledge, why hide it from them? They're going to find it somewhere.
Sure.
You know,
I mean, they have the passion for it.
You can either be part of their journey or not.
Yeah.
You know, I choose to be part of it.
I think it's a good thing. I think it's the way it should be. You know, if you're passionate about something, you want to leave it behind. We can't take it with us.
No.
You can't take that knowledge with you. Something happens, that young guy, you know, he's going to be mentioning Brandon Hitchcock, like you'd be talking about Bruce Mercer. Of course, Bruce is still going and doing good work. So, okay, let me ask you this, and this might be a stupid question. What animal or bird comes in your door and you're like, no, oh no, I don't want to deal with this? Is there a challenging animal or bird, or if you know what I'm trying to ask you here?
Well, I used to say alligator.
Well, you know, I was thinking that for some reason.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
I used to say that, but I just, you know, I just mounted a 10-footer, and I went out to Arkansas last week and helped a taxidermist buddy, mounted a 12.5-footer.
I think I seen that the other day. Is that the same one?
Oh, yeah.
Maybe?
Yeah.
Yeah, I seen that.
Small dinosaur.
Man, that thing was huge, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
So,
took 2 days for my back to recover.
I mean, what's so tough about them compared to other animals?
Well, any reptile alone, you know, with a deer, you've got hair to hide stitches or, you know, repairs, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
A reptile, you don't.
So, your flaws will show up.
Right. It's all finish work, every bit of it.
Yeah.
And it's the hide is heavy. You know, every little part has its place where you need detail there.
Yeah.
You know, you do the head. I spent a whole day on the head, rebuilding the throat and the mouth and all the detail and the flaps inside the throat and throat hole. And that stuff's not there. You got to build it all.
Right.
So, you know, setting eyes, and then you set that aside. Then you go start working on the body and getting measurements. And I think, I don't know. I mean, I've not really run anything yet that I haven't been afraid to tackle.
Yeah.
There's things that are challenging, mm-hmm. which for me, that's kind of a drive, you know, to figure it out.
Yeah. Well, so you want to conquer that.
Right. Like, yeah, I wanted to get into African animals more. Mm-hmm. So what'd I do? I went to Africa.
I remember that.
Yeah. And, you know, everybody's worried about the hunt. I'm looking at the animals.
Yeah.
We're driving around and I see, you know, the breeder pens and stuff like that. And I'm just studying these animals in the wild, how they carry their weight, you know, how their shoulders move, how they, what they're running, how do they step, how do they off step, how they carry their head when they're running.
So you know how to, what right. kind of, you know, form or whatever, I guess.
Well, I don't even need a form.
No.
I can probably carve my own. Or
so you carve your own for those.
I can.
You know, movements that you're seeing and stuff like
right,
that.
Right, right. Because, you know, somebody sculpts them. A sculptor sculpts a mannequin out of clay.
Mm-hmm.
Then they build a mold for it. And, you know, then that's how they pour their foam mannequins that's inside all these mounts. Well, that is that guy's interpretation of what that animal looks like. That might not be what I see.
Mm-hmm.
Just like these mannequins that are around you right now. If you look at them closely, you can tell they come from different companies. Each one comes from a different sculptor, what his idea of what a deer looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And through the years, I've been able to pick through. You know, some of them are old molds. Some mm-hmm. were sculpted 30 years ago, and they're still molding them.
Yeah.
So, you know, I try to match what I see with my eyes.
Well, and, you know, perfect example is this deer right here behind me.
Right.
You just seen his rack's a little odd on one side, I think, or something.
Yeah.
And you'd seen something in that form that you wanted to match up with that rack.
Right.
And I know when I put it on the wall,
it's got that crab claw on that side.
Yeah.
So you want to turn it, so you want to show that off. That's what's unique about it.
I remember putting that on the wall and taking a picture of it, and you messaged me. Oh, you have that on the wall wrong.
Yeah.
Turn it a little bit this way, and so I turned it, and I was like, "Oh, that does look better." But that's what you're saying.
Right.
You can see it. You know,
yeah.
You've done it for nearly 30 years, and it's things you see that we might not even recognize. But that's why you want to check your taxidermist out and get a good quality taxidermist. You know, I'd ask you that question because I've been in taxidermist before, and people have brought coyotes in.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, they just didn't want to deal with them, maybe because they stink or something. I know I brought you one, and you could care less. You just grabbed it and had that thing.
Right.
You know, you skinned it out in about 5 minutes. It was done. So,
yeah, but another animal.
So, you know, I know you have a lot going on, work and keeping up with. You have your girl, right? That's into
right,
and stuff,
yeah.
and your family and all that stuff. And you got the taxidermy shop. I mean, do you get time to hunt or what? I know you like to hunt.
I love to hunt. It's what got me in this to begin with. well, most taxidermists, you know,
that's the busy time.
So you're trying to find things to do on the off time.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, so we went to Africa, you know, so my busy time is like October, November. Yeah, you'll get the straggler in September, then December it starts dying off. In January, it's, you might get 3 or 4 during the month.
Mm-hmm.
Cause you're rocking pretty October, November. Nothing's getting out. You're just scanning stuff.
Yeah, just
categorizing things, putting them in, bagging them and tagging them and, you know, taking trips to the tannery and, but, yeah, I just, I forget where we was even going with this conversation.
I don't really know. I was talking about stinking coyotes or
something. The coyotes, years ago, I wouldn't touch one.
See, I've heard that a lot in the
text. Yeah, I mean, I used to trap. You know, I grew up hunting, fishing, trapping, noodling, done it all, you know.
Oh, yeah.
First and foremost, you know, I was always an art student, so I never put the two together.
So that's where it came together right there, yeah.
Right. My dad, we was coon hunters, we'd rabbit hunt, didn't do a lot of deer hunting.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get into deer hunting until I was a teenager. Started reading books and shot my first deer with a bear Super Kodiak.
Ain't this something?
The deer was running downhill. Dogs were chasing it, and I drew, and it jumped in midair, and I shot him.
Wow.
And he folded on his head.
Yeah.
I didn't know how to gut it or nothing. I dragged that deer all the way back to my car. And I probably could not repeat that shot.
Well, that's a good memory. That's what hunting's all about.
Yeah. But, my first experience with taxidermy is my uncle. He was the big avid deer hunter in the family. Mm-hmm. Everybody thought he was crazy.
Yeah.
But if you go walk in his garage and you look at all these mounts and all, the guy knows his stuff. Mm-hmm. And the first mount that I seen was probably 1979, 1980. I was 6, 7 years old, and I thought that was the coolest thing.
So it started.
It was in my grandma's chair, and it was an ugly mount. Now I remember it.
You know? Yeah.
But back then, it was just like, oh, this is awesome. And I just kept touching the glass eyes at it. You know, they looked like marbles. You know?
Yeah.
And there was a local guy that did it. His skill level wasn't there. I don't think he ever used him again. But I remember that. That stuck with me. And let's jump forward. You know, high school years, you know, I'm an art student. I could draw anything. I could, you know, I was really good at art. Grandpa taught me that stuff. And, you know, I was wanting to become an architect. You know, I thought, hey, you know, let's get in take an industrial art, which I don't think they have that anymore at our school.
I don't think they do. I don't know.
So I was trying to be an architect and go to the University of Cincinnati. Well, never could get into that. You know, after graduation, things just kind of, you know, went to the wayside, and there's nothing to do in the art field. It's like, okay, everybody else, what are they doing? You know, they're physical therapist or something like that. So I was like, okay, that's what I'll do. So I did a year of school to be a physical therapist. Hated it.
Yeah, well, the passion wasn't there.
No, it wasn't there. So I got married a few years later, and my wife at the time, her uncle, me and him became really good friends, and he was a waterfowl hunter.
Oh.
I'd never duck hunted before in my life. Mm-hmm. So we went on a goose hunt for nuisance geese in Proctorville, Ohio. And I shot a huge Canadian goose. So he says, you need to have that thing mounted. I was like, what? A bird? Never thought about it either.
Yeah.
Taxidermy never come into my life till this moment, other than seeing my uncle's deer head.
Yeah.
Even though we was avid hunters, trappers, fishermen, nothing was ever mounted in my house. And it might have been something my mom told my dad a long time ago. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we just never done that. It wasn't part of our life. And so we took this goose, and at the time, his taxidermist's name was Larry Gesswine. And he was awesome. Awesome taxidermist. I walked in the door with this bird, and the light bulb came on.
That's what it started.
Like, this is what I got to do. And I just asked him, I said, can I spend time with you? I said, you know, just hang out, you know, learn this.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I had no problem at all. So every couple times a week, weekends, I'd run out there to his place, and sometimes he's working, sometimes he wasn't. Mm-hmm. But about a year goes by, and you know, I had started taxidermy in 1992 when I graduated high school, but I had just messed around with it a little bit. So we're jumping forward to like 95 at this time. Every year I was still doing something with him. That year I started my business.
Oh,
in 95.
Really?
I just spent a year with him. He had plans. There was other things going on. And I started in a 12 by 12 building.
That's the way it goes.
Huh? It's crazy because I remember it like it was yesterday. I was renting a house off my friend, and, you know, he was freshly married and all this stuff, and all this stuff's happening going on here.
Oh, you're all right.
Hit my knee. All this stuff's going on in your life. Everything's busy and crazy, and, mm-hmm. you know, you're trying to start your life. And I buy this CJ5 off of a guy I worked with. And I bought it for, I think, $500. And what's crazy is my dad, he always stepped in and would help us. You know, when you're first starting out, your parents step in. Well, here's a little bit of money, and help you out, get you going. Because
mm-hmm.
at the same time, my wife's going to school. And it's a crazy time.
Uh-huh,
well, my dad had given me $500. And this is probably the third or fourth time he had done that. Well, my ego and my pride ate at me. Mm-hmm. I was just like, I don't like this. You know, I want to be self-sufficient. I don't want to depend on
it.
So instead of putting that in my account and helping with bills and groceries and stuff, I bought a Jeep CJ5 of a guy at work. Of course, the whole family flips out. You know, you wasted the $500. Can't believe you bought this. Well, I took that Jeep. I brought it home. I drove it for a day. I did a spray bomb camo paint job, polished the wheels, painted the seats, done the fake carpet in the interior, and got it running great. Mm-hmm. I stuck it down in front of my family's garage for $1,100. I was walking away. Guy pulled in and bought it.
Flipped it.
Flipped it like that. So I took that money, went and bought all the lumber, and built my 12x12 building, and started my taxidermy business.
Ain't that something? Nearly 30 years ago, 26 years ago, right?
Yep.
Gee whiz. It's funny how things work out, you know?
It is. It's,
it's still, now you're going strong, and you're just cruising now with it. Kind of doing,
well, you know, every taxiderm's got its problems. You know? I've got mine.
Well, as far as, I guess, your customer base. I
mean, right.
You really got a good customer base.
Yes, I do.
Base,
Very happy for my customer.
So, and that's what it takes, you know, all the hard work you put in and stuff. So it's good to think back about stuff like that. You know, I think which I graduated close same time as you did, 93. And I did a few similar things with money. Yeah. Maybe worse.
Oh, I made some stupid decisions. You look back now, it's just like, why'd I do that?
You know, I don't know about you, but I had to learn everything the hard way.
Right.
You know, if I would have done everything that I was told to do that was right, then, you know, well, I probably wouldn't have my kids for one. And, you know, just the way things work out. And anyways, so listen, y'all, I'm telling you, about 40 minutes can fly by quick when you're talking.
Are you serious?
I'm telling you. That's just, that's it. Hey, so Brian Dickens was over the other day, and Travis Cliver, you know them guys.
Oh, yeah.
And I think you might do some work for them. I don't know.
Yeah, a little bit of everything.
Now, you know, I have this thing about giraffe, and Brian killed that big old giraffe.
Right.
I couldn't imagine, you know, one person could not mount a giraffe, could they? I mean, I would have to take a team. One person could?
You could do it, yeah.
I mean, gee whiz.
I mean, it's a lot of work.
I would have to cut the ceiling out of this thing. How tall is that giraffe, you reckon, that he killed?
Looking at the picture, if he's doing a shoulder mount, which I don't know yet, it's probably 9 foot, 8, 9 foot, something like that. From the shoulder to the top of the head. And the head's, you know, 3-4 feet long.
Yeah.
You know, it's a monster.
Yeah, that's...
But it's this thing with, like, African work. There's just so much customization you got
to
do.
Well, you have to.
You know, there's... With every animal, there's balance in nature, you know. Mm-hmm. I ain't figured the giraffe out yet.
Well, I couldn't imagine. I mean, I'm sure there's not a lot of giraffes being mounted.
It's like if somebody brings you an animal... You know, there's a mannequin on the market for that animal.
Yeah.
They bring you something that's not available, usually like an exotic ranch or something. They bring you a yak. There's one yak mannequin on the market, and it's huge. Mm-hmm. We got to know how to read that skin, that skull, and how to change those measurements and extract them and make the mannequin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when God made these animals, you know, the animals around us, you know, is proof that, you know, there's a God that made this stuff.
No doubt.
You know, the head on it. Let's take a white-tailed deer. We'll break it down real quick. The length of the head is the same length as the neck, is the height of the shoulder.
Yeah, that's something. Isn't it?
The length of the ears is the same as the length of the eyes and nose, to the center of the front of the eye to the back of the head. Hmm. You know, there's so much balance in nature. Giraffe? That's on a different scale.
That's wild, isn't it?
If you look at them, if you take a picture of a giraffe and you look at the balance of them, the center point would be the front shoulder.
Yeah.
So the back spine is the same length as the neck, has the same length as the front leg. So I ain't figured the head out yet, though, you know. So it's.
Well, I don't know. I think he's going to get that thing mounted. I don't know.
I tried talking him into doing a life-size. We'll make a couch out of it, lay it down or something. You know?
Oh, that'd be sweet. I mean, everybody loves giraffes, you know.
Yeah.
I'd love to kill a giraffe.
I was over. I seen that a dark one over there, and I wanted it bad, but my hunt would have been over with. So
that'd have been done.
That'd have been done. First day.
So, well, man, Brandon, I think we about covered everything. It just goes by quick, doesn't it?
Yeah. I'm not on here really to advertise for myself.
No, I mean, I appreciate you coming over.
I'm kind of semi-retired.
Yeah. Well, you're so busy anyways.
Right, right. It's just, you know, life has just sent me in a different direction. Yeah. Since I, you know, lost a job and 14 months no job and then starting a new one. And mm-hmm. Things have just kind of snowballed and just got crazy there for a while.
Oh, yeah.
So you're playing catch up.
Yeah.
And I, you know, last year I had to stop taking stuff in just so I can get things adjusted to my life. And, you know, so the future plans I have, I've got a core set of people that I'm wanting to do work for, the people mm-hmm. that actually pay me.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, I've heard that from a lot of tech stores.
Yeah.
Too.
It's bad.
Getting caught. And I guess everybody's all pumped up and full of adrenaline when they bring it to the taxidermist.
Right. And, you know, any taxidermy shop, it's about cash flow. You got to keep cash flow going. And if people don't pick their mounts up, don't pay for them.
I mean, what do you do with those mounts? I mean, you just try to sell them or?
You can't sell them. It's illegal to sell them.
Yeah, it is illegal. You have to have a tag.
Small claims court, take ownership of it, then you have a right to sell it. Yeah. See, Ohio is different than Kentucky, and, you know, it's a mess. So it just hangs on the wall.
So it's kind of a gamble there. Like you say, if you can get a core there.
Usually I get a deposit, and, you know, that usually covers most of the...
Everything but your time, I guess.
Right, your time. It's time you could have been spent on somebody
else. Your labor.
Right.
Yeah. So, geez. Well, I asked you the toughest animal. You said alligator and stuff like that. I mean, what's your favorite animal to mount, if you have a favorite? You know, I know that crow I seen over there was pretty cool.
I'm loving waterfowl.
Waterfowl? Yeah.
I actually just figured a waterfowl out probably 2 years ago.
So it was a challenge
to
figuring them out.
It was always a challenge, right? Okay. And the turkeys. I've had so many problems with trying to mount turkeys over the years, and you run into problems with like freeze-dried companies and trying to get your freeze-dried turkey heads back, and there's just so many issues. And I'll be honest, I got some from 4 years ago
mm-hmm.
that I took a hurting back then because I was waiting on a company to send me the heads.
Yeah.
I'd done spent $6,500 out on turkey heads.
So, and I've heard that probably 15 years ago from another taxidermist
right.
on his freeze-dried heads.
Yeah.
Having the same trouble.
Yeah. So, you know, what I do, I went and bought a freeze-dried machine, tried to keep it going. Well, I didn't. Stupid thing, he's breaking down and repairs. Yeah. And so now I just, you know, I buy the head. Somebody brings me a 25-pound bird. I'll tell the guy, I need a head for a 25-pound bird. So they're going to get that big softball size head back.
Mm-hmm.
But most freeze-dried companies, they will skin the head out and put it on a mannequin. Well, then they look all droopy and they're not the right size. But I buy them from the guys that do it right. They leave a skull in.
Yeah.
And so you keep that shape. If somebody brought you, they said, well, hey, I want my head back. You bloat it all to pieces.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So,
oh, yeah.
It's easier to go get you a good one.
Get a good one that looks good.
Right, right.
And, so, you know, you're talking about turkeys.
Yeah.
Somebody grabs hold of that turkey neck and wrings the feathers off of it. You know what I'm talking about when they're sitting spinning. I mean,
well, they're sitting there flopping anyway. They're beating feathers off themselves.
Is there anything you can do with that?
On the feathers that come out,
yeah,
they're going to lose feathers. I mean, there's just no way around it.
Well, the first turkey I took this year was beautiful.
Yeah.
And then the one I brought you was rough. Yeah. But I don't know why. I just wanted to get him. Where's my boy? He got a Marshall shirt on.
Uh-oh.
So, anyways,
turkeys, just wait till they stop flopping.
Before you grab a hold of them?
Before you grab a hold of them.
See, I'm terrible.
Yeah, you want to pick them up right now.
Yeah,
you know?
I go down there and I tackle them. I hit them like Lawrence Taylor or something.
These guys.
Bad in a gray.
You know, a lot of guys, they just want to do a tail mount, you know, and they'll keep their spurs and they'll cut their beard off.
Mm-hmm.
But the guy that's wanting the mount, you know, don't be throwing it over your shoulder and carrying out of the woods. You're just jacking up them breast feathers. You're breaking them. And, you know, I know we'll be coming into fall turkey season before long.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to get a turkey mounted and you've been watching one, he's showing up on your trail cams when you're, you know, prospecting deer. Mm-hmm. He's got a 11, 12 inch beard on him. You know, when you go to shoot him, wait till he turns sideways and stretch that head out. Don't split his tail.
I've heard which fall wouldn't matter, but I heard if you want to get one shot or mounted, don't shoot him while he's in strut. I mean, is there something to that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, he tucks that head down.
Yeah. Well, you shouldn't anyways, because like I said, he has his head tucked down.
And right. And, well, I mean, if you don't plan on mounting, shoot him. You know, yeah. No matter. But if you're wanting to mount, you know, wait till he, you know, give him a little perk, you know, and get him to stretch that head out. Then knock his head off.
And then whack him.
But, when he goes in full strut and he tucks that head in, you're just going to damage the bird. You'll blow the hackles up and the scaps and everything else on the bird, and it's a nightmare.
Well, I'll tell you, Brandon, we'll get out here, and I appreciate you coming on. Hey, everybody, you know, listen to this 5 times before deer season so you know what to do with them deer before you bring them to your, take them to your taxidermist.
Keep them cool and move them.
2 hours, 2 hour limit. Don't be gropping it. And the other thing is,
if you're going to a deer processor, don't. I mean, there's a lot of good deer processors around. Don't let your head stay there for a week.
Yeah, you know what? I about made that mistake on this one right here, if you remember.
Right.
Because it was taking about an hour from here in Ohio.
It had a funky smell to it.
And you barely saved that.
Yeah.
But it was there for a week. I was waiting for him to call. But right. They had that thing skinned out. It was skinned out, and it had got warm.
Yeah, if you skin it, they'll usually skin it that day. Yeah. It's in a cooler, and that day or the next.
Yeah.
You know, pay him his money for the meat process. Get your head.
Get your head. So that's some good advice right there.
I've run into a bunch of them that sat, you know, they wait to pick their meat up, and then you get their head a week later, because these processors, they get busy.
Yeah.
You know, 1,100 deer come to a shop.
Well, a lot of times they just throw them deer heads in the floor. Well,
they don't want them there. They're stepping over them.
Yeah, it's just they want you to come and get them too.
Well, they, you know, they leave that hunk of meat in the neck and they fold it up in the bag and it sits there. Well, that blood's pooling out of that neck right on that hide.
Yeah.
And they will slip right there, even in a cooler.
Yeah.
So you want to get to moving.
So think about that, y'all. Listen to this at least 5 times. Brandon's give us some good advice, all of us, including myself. And You have about 2 hours early season, you know, when it's warm here in Kentucky. Get that sled or that plastic drag that you was talking about, Brandon. When you're dragging them things out, remember they have their summer coats on. They're thin. Don't be handling that velvet rack. Check out the meat processor. Get your deer back from him quick, and just listen to this again.
Oh, yeah. Repeat.
Hey, Brandon Hitchcock, we appreciate you coming on. This is Rob Michon of Hunting Out Loud. We'll see you all later.